Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. I picked up a new pair of headphones. The headphones I've been using to record the podcast with, I think I picked up about 20 years ago. They were a cheap pair of Sony that I used for an old video camera I had. And this is like totally, I just had to adjust all my volume controls and everything because these are so much louder than the other ones. I actually thought I had screwed something up on my settings at first, and I was like, nope, it's just the new earphone. So, wow, what a huge difference those made, but now it's a little bizarre because it sounds like my sound's all off. So hopefully on your end, you won't hear anything because I didn't change the microphone, but on my end, this is like a revelation. Like I'm like booming in my ears right now. So anyway, to start this one off, just to go back to the last one, Billy and I last weekend did our shutter video for the hot sauce tarantula feeding challenge. And I had mentioned this before, and I knew some people were asking me about it, if I was going to do it, and he did it. And you know what? We had a lot of fun. And for me, it was kind of cool because obviously all of what I do, my whole YouTube channel is not so much based on entertainment or based on me being a YouTuber. It's about animals. It's educational. That is never going to change. I have, believe me, and for people that, you know, I think some people think I'm being obstinate about this or you know, quite frankly, I've had some guy told me I'm being foolish because I know what type of videos I could make if I wanted to get a lot more subscribers. I trust me, I'm very well aware. I know which ones perform well. I know that ones that are a little more fun and have a little, you know, feature a little more personality and not so much of me talking, the educational stuff generally fare better, but just not what I'm doing this for. That's the thing. And I think one thing I want to make very clear is that I don't bemoan people for doing that. I mean, that makes, obviously, there are a lot of incredibly entertaining channels out there. There are ones that I watch, and I've had some people, you know, actually express surprise, like, you really watch them? Well, yeah, they're entertaining. They're fun, and they have spiders, so it's like a nice combination. It's just not what I want to do. It's nothing. I think people read things into it that aren't there. However, where it gets a little irritating sometimes is, like, I don't do a lot of fun stuff on my channel, and that's by design. We could do all kinds of funny things, and I'm telling you, my household, we joke here. You know, you get glimpses of it with the dogs and the kids and stuff in the background and stuff, but we are mad people over here. Like this house, if we were to do a reality show, people would think it was scripted because you couldn't possibly be that nuts. And I purposely don't bring a lot of that into this because that's not what my videos are about. They're about the spiders. They're always going to be about the spiders. And I think what happens is every once in a while, I'll do one of these videos and people get worried that I'm going to change what I'm doing because I'll get a lot of, hey, that was fun, really cool. And the ones I really like were the ones like, it was nice to see you do something that was unscripted, not really educational. Not that they wanted me to get away from that, but just it was nice to see me doing something different. And I enjoy doing something different every once in a while. It does allow me to show off a little bit more of my personality. However, I got an email from somebody that basically expressed, and I won't read the whole thing, and everybody's entitled to their opinions, but it kind of upset me only because I don't do this very often, but the main point of the email was they were disappointed that I accepted the challenge and I was going to turn my channel like all the other channels out there, and people come to me for information, not to see me, you know, crying over eating hot sauce, which is kind of silly. And I was like, you know what? That's a little bit unfair because I don't do this stuff very often. It happens every once in a while when I do like the tarantula feeding challenge, the one I do with Mark, the off the tongs, which again, I got to do another one of those. It's just fun. And you know what? It does attract more eyes. I've had more people tell me they found me from those videos and then stick around for the information than probably anything else I've done. So I just don't want people to get the wrong impression. Whenever I do something fun, there's what people don't realize is a lot of the YouTubers, the YouTube community out there, everybody kind of chats behind the scenes and everybody's very complimentary of each other. And we have just because it doesn't make it into videos and such, there's a community and there's people that, you know, I would consider friends that are doing this. That just because we don't cross over all the time or, you know, appear in each other's videos, I have a lot of respect for and I like them. So when somebody invites you to do something like this, I'm sorry, I'm jumping on it. It's a great opportunity to have a little fun with people that, you know, I don't get to often, you know, interact with. And it's a nice way to present something a little bit different for my channel to attract some people in that might not look at it otherwise. Because let's call a spade, general, you know, Joe Schmo off the street that really doesn't know much about tarantulas is going to pop on one of my videos. And if it's just one of my husbandry videos, they're going to be like, what is this guy talking about? And I've had it. I get that comment all the time. Like, dude, you talk too much. Just show spiders because they don't get what I'm doing. And that's totally okay. I've had some people come on. I had one guy, my favorite one was somebody that came on. a couple years earlier and basically went, you talk way too much, and then came out and apologized 2 years later and was like, you know what, I get it now, I'm into the hobby, and I realized that when I really needed information, your channel was the one I went back to, and apologized. I thought it was awesome. So stuff like this is just fun. I hope that some of you check out the video. I know the cool part is now I'm realizing, you know, I've mentioned this ad nauseum probably, but that my podcast audience doesn't necessarily overlap with my video audience, meaning that some of you guys are just listening to the podcast, and every once in a while, somebody will pop over and went, yeah, I just wanted to check out this video because you mentioned it, which is cool. So if you want to see something a little different, a little fun, I will admit I might have slipped and swore in the middle of it. I did bleep it out. I was going to cut it out, but Billy has been a long proponent of the fact that, you know what, you can let a little bit of your personality out every once in a while as long as you're not being too bad. And it was a genuine moment, and it seemed to be, people appreciate it because I was really worried. I mean, last minute, I'm editing this video up, and I did the whole bleep thing because I thought it would be funny. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I want this out there because I want to be professional. I'm a teacher by trade. I don't need stuff out there with me using profanity, honestly. But I think when you see it, it's a genuine moment. And we were getting silly because that stuff was hot, and we had a good time with it. So if you get a chance, you know, I normally don't try to get anybody over from the podcast to check out the videos, but this might be a fun one to check out because it's us having a little bit of fun. Secondly, this is going to be a long day for me as far as talking on a microphone, because I got contacted from Dylan from Animals at Home. It's a podcast. It's a blog. It kind of does the same thing I do, but he does more like all exotic pets, reptiles, and everything else. And apparently he, on his podcast, somebody chimed in and said, hey, you should talk to Tom Moran from Tom's Big Spiders, which I thought was incredibly cool because, again, having come from the snake hobby, you know, I was big into snakes back in the 90s. I think there's a lot of crossover as far as those two hobbies go. And I always will, you know, take an opportunity to try to bring more people over into the hobby. So if his are mostly reptile people, I can go. I do have that unique perspective where I've kept both. I've, you know, kept reptiles back in the day, lizards, not a lot of lizards, mostly snakes. I think I had at my highest, I think it was right around 40 snakes or so. But I thought it was an awesome opportunity to kind of get, you know, maybe rope in some other people to check out, you know, tarantulas as far as being cool, exotic pets, because I do think sometimes they're overlooked. I know I've spoken with people in the reptile circles before that they don't get what the appeal is sometimes, and it might be a cool opportunity. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's going to be a long, he's already given me the questions, which I won't share here because I'm going to try to get everybody to go over and listen to it after, which I think will be cool, but it's going to be kind of like a discussion, but I think it'll allow me, hopefully, if I'm on my game, it'll allow me to really articulate what it is everybody loves about this hobby and set some people off right off the bat with some good information on how to approach the hobby. So instead of, hey, go to Petco, pick up something you don't know anything about, grab a cage, grab a heat mat, it'll be more like, all right, here are some things you should really consider doing beforehand. And the big one, obviously, looking for information, doing your research, making sure you know what you're buying before you buy it. Don't just rush into it. There's plenty of spiders available. Take your time, figure out, you know, which species you should get, how to set it up, all the things you have to look forward to before getting it. So I'm really kind of excited about that, although I'm also nervous about it because, as you guys know, my house is crazy. There's always noise in the background. I just had Lily jump up in the background and I basically paused it and edited it out and made a big sound. And Dylan was like, you know, we need, you know, try to get a quiet place. Well, my house is quiet until it's not. So could be interesting. I tried to warn him ahead of time. It's the best I can do. And when I do the podcast, I'm sitting in my living room. I have my computer angled and my microphone angled in such a way that it hopefully doesn't pick up a lot of noise going on around me. And my dogs right now are all sleeping, which is good, but they inevitably get up and walk around and fart and do all that fun stuff. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, you know, he thinks it's funny. And anybody, the thing I tried to tell him is that anybody that follows my videos or listens to my podcast, like the people that know me, this is the norm. I mean, I don't even bother trying to apologize for it anymore. It's just what it is, and people seem to appreciate it and find it charming, which is great. But I don't know how it's going to go with him when, you know, if I'm sitting here and Lily comes over, jumps on my lap, and starts shaking off. We'll see how it goes. But anyway, I will be posting that up when it's up so people can listen to it. Hopefully, we'll drive some traffic his way, too, because he really does have a cool channel. After he contacted me, I went, and I don't do a lot of listening to the podcast, but I listened to a couple of his. One in particular that was really cool, where somebody made some rather disparaging comments on one of his YouTube videos, and he contacted the person and offered them the chance to come on the show so they could hash it out intelligently. And it was neat. The guy kept his composure. Dylan managed to keep his composure, where I pride myself on that. But the individual he was talking to, you could tell, was somebody that didn't have a lot of information but thought they knew everything. And that's a really tough one for me to deal with. But he did great. And it really made me go back and listen to some of his other ones. He talks about, you know, how keeping pets humanely, which I love. He has people questioning, you know, why are we keeping reptiles? Why are we pulling them out of the wild to keep in our homes? Just really good stuff and very informative. And he's very articulate, which is awesome. So that'll be at, apparently right now, I'll go ahead and say it. It's 10:31 here in the morning. Saturday, Billy got a late start to the store, so I'm starting a little bit later. But we'll be meeting up at 2 online and doing this one. And I'm hoping it comes out really well, and I'm hoping I can be a good ambassador to our hobby from people that may be listening to his. So for the main focus of this podcast today, and it's funny because I read a review the other day. I was going online. I was trying to find something, and I ended up, I think, on my iTunes page, a review, and somebody talked about how I go off on tangents, and I was laughing because I mentioned a Billy before. I was like, sometimes you have a topic, and you realize as you're talking about that topic, it leads into like a better topic or one that you're more, I don't know, enthusiastic about or have more information about. So I've been waiting for somebody for a while to mention that. And the nice thing, it was a really nice review because he just said, be advised, he kind of jumps around. Sometimes what he originally says he's talking about is not where he ends up. Totally understandable and 100% accurate, although I am going to try to reel that in a little bit because there's been times where I get done with the podcast and I'm like, man, that went really great. And then I will like listen back to them and be like, my Lord, I was all over the place today. And sometimes it's just because I have a lot of information to give out and I try not to make it scripted because I think it flows better that way. But sometimes I bounce off my notes and go nuts. So what we're going to try to do is make it clearer as to what the main focus of these podcasts are. And I will say before there was a couple times where I had, like I talked about three topics, but I don't want my titles of the podcast to get too long. So I put one of them. So I think what happens is it might be the middle topic and people put it on like, wait a minute, he just spoke 15 minutes about something totally different. So I'm going to try to tighten that up a little bit because I do think that's a really good, you know, something that could turn people off, and I don't want to do that. So today, here's what I'm going to attempt to do, and I'll tell you, it's going to be a list, and as you'll know by the title, because this is going to be the title of this podcast, but I've had several people over the last year or so say, you know what, I like the beginner species list, those are cool, I like the top favorite list, those are cool, but why doesn't anybody ever do a list of like the best showcase spiders or the most visible spiders? And I was like, oh, you know, a lot of times I'll respond, great idea. And this has been something, it might even have been more than a year ago, because my notes, this is in my old notebook, I found my old notes on it. But it just keeps popping up. It just popped up again twice this week. Somebody was like, hey, I just saw a list of best showcase spiders. Could you do one? And I'll tell you, all right, so here's the reason why I haven't done one to date. It is totally subjective and can change from keeper to keeper. And I had a really difficult time. I have a hard time putting any list out there. Period. Your top favorite species, I love all my spiders. I don't have a favorite species. Your top, you know, beginner species, it's tough because some people argue you don't even need a beginner species. Some people start right with old worlds, they have no problem. Some people start with the beginner. It's the lists are very difficult for me to begin with. Then to come up with one talking about, you know, the top showcase species, my first thought was, well, something that may be visible for me may be burrowing or hiding for somebody else. So I think about the terms where we were talking about visible spiders and somebody came on and said their favorite spider is their H. maculata. It's beautiful. Everybody should get one. It's always right out in the open, sitting right out in the thing. And I'm like, I have two of them. I never see them. And I talk to a lot of other people that have ones. They don't see them. So for this individual, that's a great showcase spider. That's a wonderful spider then. If my H. mac was out all the time, I would love that. But for a lot of us, it's not. So I'm thinking in terms of, all right, I have ones in my collection that are very visible, that are going to be visible all the time. And those are the easy ones to, you know, add to the list and talk about. But then I have other ones that I know for a fact that mine may be visible, but I've talked to other people who aren't. And then there are people that have ones that are visible. Acimani, Afanopelma acimani. A lot of people love Acimani. There's been a big discussion, or there's a lot of discussion about whether or not they're actually obligate burrowers, meaning they have to burrow and they need substrate. My two adults have both burrowed and stayed burrow as adults. I've spoken to other people that give them the substrate to burrow in. They don't burrow. I think those people end up with probably more of a showcase spider because when they open it, it's like right in its hide or right out in the open. And ooh, there's my beautiful spider. Mine is not a showcase spider. Mine, I'm trying to do a video on their care right now, and I can't get any footage of it because it's down the bottom of a den. So, sterling example of how this can vary from place to place. And again, I haven't kept every species in the world. So when you do a list like this and go, all right, these are the top, you know, showcase or most visible spiders I have, these are the most visible spiders I have in my collection or that I have kept. And I've kept, I think, probably 120. I think I exaggerate. I feel terrible because an older one, I think I said I had 150 species. I think I've kept 120 species out of over 900. So that's just a fraction of what's available, what we know of in the world and what's available in the hobby. So there are obviously going to be spiders that I can't comment on because I haven't kept. So what this inevitably opens up is, here's my list of best, you know, best showcase spiders, and people coming on, what about this one? What about this one? I'm shocked you didn't add this one, and it just gets annoying. Like, it's like, I know, I can't keep them all. So what I've decided to do is call this one the top, you know, we'll call it the top 12, the 30 dozen, I don't know, the top 10, top 12 showcase spiders I have in my collection. And these are ones that I literally walked around. I've been going in there a couple days, just kind of making notes of which ones are always out in the open. And although I say top 12, in some cases we're looking at an entire genus and a couple genera make, like the majority of the species in those genera make great showcase spiders. So what I will do is I will pick one out of like a genus and say, all right, we'll go with this one. This would be my top favorite out of this one. But any one of them will work. And you guys will see how that'll go in a moment when we get into the actual list. And as far as an order, I have one or two that I think are like a clear number one, number two, number three. But for the most part, I'm just going to throw out some ones that I found that if you pick these up, generally speaking, you're going to end up with a very visible spider that you can show off to your friends. Now, caveat. We're talking about adults here or young adults. I'm not going to do this list. I'm not going to have this list apply to slings because, as we've discussed, most slings will burrow or do some type of burrowing. So to try to sit there and say, all right, Lazy Adora Parahibana right from the start is a good showcase spider, that would be a lie in my opinion. I've raised, I think, four of them. And they all burrowed as slings and right up to like juvenile stage until young adult stage in a couple cases. So the trick with this one is we're not talking about slings. We're talking about at the end of the day, when you have an adult, when you've raised up an adult or a young adult, this is the spider you can put in a really nice cage enclosure and set it up real nice, and you're going to see your spider. So, whew, here we go. I've avoided this, and at some point I will probably turn this into a video only because usually the comments come from people. I've had a couple comments on the podcast thing. I've had that asked a couple times to do a podcast on it, but I think it would be something that would also make for a good video. But again, I'm going to have to do it like, all right, this is just my opinion. Here are the ones in my collection I've seen, and kind of open it up to people to offer what they've seen in their own collections. So here we go. To kick this one off, I'm going to start with an old world species that... this is one of the ones that some people report theirs are visible, some people report that theirs aren't. I've had three, they've been very visible, and I found this to be a great showcase spider, but again, it comes down to the individual specimens. You may get one that you don't see very often, but my first vote would be Harpactera pulchripes. I absolutely adore this spider, one of my favorite spiders of all time. Just, I love the look of them. Mine have all been sweethearts. And again, I did a huge husbandry video on these guys and basically polled people to ask what they saw as far as temperaments concerned. The majority of people said that theirs were pretty calm and visible, but there were also a huge chunk of people that said theirs were skittish and would hide and would not come out very often. And I had a couple of people that said theirs burrow and never come out. So technically, when this first came out, everybody, the general consensus was that it was a burrowing species. I have not found that behavior with mine. They hit a certain point and they're fairly visible. They will web a lot on the surface. They will do some digging, but mine are mostly out in the open. So what I did is over the last week, I kept checking one of my girls to make sure that she was out in the open. She was always out in the open. I took her cage out. She'd kind of slowly go to her burrow. I have another one that's a juvenile, and that one is also usually right on top. So they will bolt to their burrows when disturbed, but more often than not, if you set these guys up in a good cage with some adequate cover, some places to web, they will do a little burrowing. They might do a lot of webbing. Mine have actually done a lot of webbing lately, and mine usually sit right out in the open. So you'll have some fossorial species that you only see their legs. Mine will come right out, sit right out in the open. Mine's webbed a big area and will sit right out on the webbing, which, again, there's nothing makes a spider's colors come out and contrast better than, you know, a nice white background. So that webbing really does help kind of draw out that beauty. But Harpactera pulchripes, if you're looking for one, for some cases is why it's going to be the first one mentioned and kind of like technically speaking the lowest one on the list. You may end up with one that burrows into adulthood, but for most of the people, you have a really good chance of getting, especially if you get a female, of getting a beautiful spider that's going to be very visible. Next one on the list is the big boy or big girl, the Theraphosa. I'm going to go with Theraphosa sturmi, although I think Blondie would work. I have not raised Apophysis yet. That's definitely high on my wish list, and I need to pick one of those up ASAP. But I've had Sturmies, and all three of them at a certain point abandon their burrows. And this is, again, this is one of the ones that if you get as a sling, expect some burrowing. I have two Theraphosa Blondie right now that are both still kind of stick their burrows. They venture out, but as soon as they're disturbed, they dart right back in their burrows, and they are reluctant to come back out again until things calm down. So it's after they start putting on size, I've found that mine will sometimes use, if you supply them with a hide, they'll sometimes use the hide, but I usually found mine right out in the open. And my female, my big female that unfortunately passed last year, was stunning and would just sit right out in the open. She was very laid back, never kicked a hair, very visible. People that set them up in bioactive enclosures or enclosures with a lot of, you know, foliage, whether it be fake foliage or real foliage, tend to see theirs venture out more to hunt, which is awesome. I've seen some beautiful displays with them where the spider is sitting right out in the open. But again, that caveat that some folks report that theirs will hide in their burrows and won't come out at all. I've talked to a couple people that are like, yeah, I can only drag mine out when I like feed them. I try to get them to come out with the feeding, but then they go right back to their dens or their hides. So my experience has been they are an amazing showcase spider. If not just, you know, if you're looking for something to show your friends to impress them, like, hey, look at, I keep giant tarantulas. You can't do much better than a Theraphosa, because even if they're not the prettiest spiders, because I hear the argument, and that'll be one of the arguments that people will give through this. Yeah, they may be out in the open, but they're ugly. Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I happen to like the look of them, but I know other people that say they look like just giant, big, brown, boring spiders. I will tell you that somebody, if you're showing off your collection to friends who aren't into tarantulas, they are going to be impressed by the sheer size of it. It doesn't matter. That thing could be, you know, gray. Actually, gray would be pretty. I can't think of anything worse than brown, honestly. But it could be any other boring color. They're still going to be impressed by the fact that you have a 9, 10, 11-inch spider. So Theraphosa, we'll go with Theraphosa sturmi on this one. Theraphosa blondie would work just as well. And I have a funny feeling for those of you who keep Apophysis. I say Apophysis. Who knows? I'm terrible with the names. But I haven't raised that one, so I can't comment on it. But I got a funny feeling some people would say that would be a good one too. Just got to be careful of those hairs. That's the big one. But if it's sitting on a shelf contained, chances are you're going to see this one out quite a bit. Next one I would put on the list is Nandu chromatis, or the Brazilian black, red, and white, or something like that. I'm terrible with the common names, but Nandus, I personally find them to be one of the most striking spiders out there. There's just something about the coloration of them, the carapace color, creamy carapace with the, you know, the grayish and the obviously the red bums. They're just cool looking spiders. And mine, after, again, all the, I'm just going to stop saying it. They will burrow as slings in juveniles, I found, but once they put on some size, they're usually right out in the open. They can be a little bit skittish, and that's something to watch out for. And the hairs are usually particularly nasty from what I've heard. I've not been haired by mine. I've not been exposed to hair from mine, but the hairs can be pretty bad. But most folks I talk to have, you know, they're skittish spiders, but they're usually sitting right out in the open. I did just rehouse mine into something bigger, about a 5-gallon tank, and I gave her room to burrow, and she did burrow right down to the bottom, so I'm not seeing her as much now. And she has been a little weirdo. This is the one that used to decapitate crickets and then stack them up in a corner and hide them. It was a little eerie. But overall, I still like, yes, today I went in there to go just kind of poke around one more time and double check my notes and make sure these things are visible before I talk about them. And she was sitting right up on top of her burrow, so she wasn't in it. So I do see her out more than not. And the folks I've talked to that have kept them said, theirs are very visible. They're gorgeous spiders. They're unique looking spiders. They're cool spiders that are readily available. So I definitely think Nandu chromatis makes a good showcase spider. Now, while we're talking about Nandus, I got to throw one out there. Nandu terpepi, or terpepi, I believe it's pronounced. I absolutely love this girl. She's just this big, beautiful ball of blonde fluff, a cool personality, and most importantly, always visible. She has a hide. I got her when she was probably about 4 inches. She was a pretty good size, one of the few I bought, you know, kind of as a young adult. And by that point, she had pretty much outgrown the burrowing. She would when she molted. She had enough substrate to do some digging in a cork bark hide, and she kind of dug it out and kind of filled it in behind her. But then as soon as she was ready to eat, she threw her molt out and she's right out in the open. Every time I go in there, she is sitting right out in the open, rarely goes to her burrow. She is one right now. I've got the Nandu, clematis in a 5-gallon enclosure. I'm looking to pick up one for her as well to get her in something that's clear and more visible because she's one of the most beautiful spiders I have. And I know a lot of folks have been singing her praises over the last couple of years, and a lot of folks have been picking them up now. So if you do see slings around, they're tough to find sometimes, but I would definitely encourage you to pick them up. They're fast growing. They will burrow as slings. You do need to keep some moist substrate in there, but as they put on size, they abandon their burrows like many species. And what you have is a gorgeous, fluffy, very unique looking spider that's going to make an excellent showcase animal. Now, when I was putting this list together, I wanted to make sure I included some arboreal species. The problem with some of the arboreals I have, especially some of the old worlds or my Salmopeus, is that they're not very visible. And that's been one of the problems I have is with, like, I love Salmopeus. My Pyramenia is gorgeous. And if she was out all the time, absolutely a showcase spider. But guess what? She's normally not. And from a lot of people I talk to, theirs do hide. HMAC, as we mentioned earlier, love the species. Gorgeous, don't see it a lot. So I tried to give some thought to ones that if somebody wanted to keep one of these gorgeous old world arboreals, what would you go for? One of the more fast and feisty arboreals. And I landed on one of my all-time favorites, Pisolatheria vittata. I've had three of these, and all of them, I mean, again, slings are going to burrow. We'll just assume that's going to be the case with all of these. But as young adults and adults, out of all of my Pisolatheria, I've had the best luck with catching them out in the open and just sitting right on the side of the enclosure for all to see. So my first female was always very visible. I originally, when she was smaller, had her in one of those Exoterra Nano Talls, and then I switched her over to one of the giant Sterilite containers, and she was either always sitting right on the side of the enclosure or on that piece of cork bark, very picturesque and visible. And then I got two slings a while back, grew them up. They're about 4 inches now, 4.5 inches, and I went in the last few days. I've gone in there. They're sitting right out in the open for everybody to see. They're either on the side of the enclosure or, again, on the cork bark, which makes them very visible. So, again, this is a species that usually, if it disturbed, will hide and retreat to a burrow, but I found that if you put them in a cage where there's a little bit of cover, they will venture out sometimes and hang out in the open. And again, this was a tougher one because a lot of the species I was looking at, you know, I have P. redunculus. I'll catch them out in the morning when the light goes on, but they pretty quickly scuttle to their burrows and hide as long as the light's on. You know, the aforementioned HMAC, my P. gigas, it's P, right? Pseudoclamorous gigas. They changed the name recently and I'm still trying to learn it. But that one I will catch out in the morning quite a bit, but as soon as, you know, the lights go on, it kind of goes back to its burrow. So having a tough time trying to find ones that those larger arboreals that are gorgeous, they're beautiful, but they're also very reclusive and shy. So I would say if you're going to go for one, and again, I've talked to folks that have regalis that are very visible. My regalis is, I'll catch her out occasionally, but she's still kind of hide, so that's why I didn't include her. But I'm guessing there are other Pisolatheria species that you could probably keep. It depends on the specimen that would be visible, but my vote right now is just going to go to P. vittata. Now, as we start getting further into this list, it's going to get more difficult to break it down to just species, so we're going to be talking about a few genera that I just think, honestly, almost anything out of it makes a good showcase spider. So, for example, I'm going to go with my next one. I'm going to go with Gramostola pulchropes, one of my favorites. And again, this is why we say it's subjective. I love the look of the spider. I have a bunch of them. I love them. I'm working right now. I just finished the script for a care video on Gramostola pulchropes, Chaco Goldeni, love the common name of it. And I'm going to be doing a video of it, and it's been on my mind, and I'm looking to do a rehouse of some of mine to get them into something prettier. So that would definitely be a species that I would pick because once they abandon their burrows, they are out in the open all the time. Mine, I have some usually right around, they hit the 3.5 inch mark around there, 3 to 4 inches, we'll say. They're out all the time in the open, very visible. They will still move substrate around and do some bulldozering, if that's a word. But they're out in the open. I've never had one use a hide. They generally molt right out in the open. You're going to have a spider you're going to see quite a bit. And with those brilliant golden bands on the knees, they're just an attractive animal, and they get pretty big, supposedly 7 to even 8 inches. I haven't had that. I haven't met anybody that has an 8-inch one yet, but it's been floated around that they can grow up to 8 inches, so we'll go with 8 inches. So that's a pretty big spider, and one that if you set up in a nice enclosure, you're going to see it all the time. However, here's where it gets into the fact that, honestly, any Gramostola makes a good showcase spider, because the majority of them abandon their burrows and they're visible. So it just depends on what you like. So if you like Gramostola pateri, talk about a spider you're going to see all the time. Mine has never once used her burrow that I know. Well, that's a lie. She has a cork bark round in there, and the other day I actually caught her in it. But usually she's sitting right out in the open, sometimes for days at a time, in the exact same position. So I know some folks don't like the look of them. They think they're your typical tarantula, big brown fuzzy spider. I love them. Purple carapaces are beautiful. Obviously, I love my girl, the queen. Gramostola rosea, which obviously there's a lot of talk about, they will eventually be the same species, but we'll keep them separate because rosea, generally a little more red, cool looking spiders, a little more active, but again, will sit right out in the open. So Gramostola iorhingi, there's another one that's an absolute, I love my iorhingi. They're stunning. They're great eaters. They're big, supposedly, again, up to 7-8 inches or so for a female, big spider. And they're absolutely, mine is always out in the open. She used a burrow. When I first got her, she was about 3.5 inches or so. And she would burrow when she molted, which was good because then I knew when she was in pre-molt, it was easy to figure out because she just disappeared and burrowed. Now she doesn't do that anymore. She's right out in the open. And this is another one I want to get an enclosure for because I want to see her more often. I have her right now in the breeding boxes. They're kind of shallow. I pick these up. I go through these stages where I pick up these enclosures. Here's one of my tangents alert. I pick up these enclosures. I try them out. I love them for a couple of years. And then I find something I like better and I kind of phase them out. I think it's part of the hobby for me, but I want to get her in something bigger, a big acrylic or something that I can see her much better and get some, you know, foliage in there, make a little more aesthetically pleasing enclosure for her. But Gramostola iorhingi would be another one. So honestly, pick a Gramostola species, and I'm guessing if you talk to people that keep them and like them, they will tell you they are great showcase spiders. So there's a lot to choose from there. Those are just some of the ones I personally keep. And while we're talking about the slow-growing ones, let's talk about Brachypelma. Brachypelma, awesome genus of spiders. Some beautiful tarantulas in the mix here. We have Brachypelma hammeri, Brachypelma bomi, Brachypelma, I'm having a hard time saying that one this morning, Brachypelma auratum. I pick one, honestly. Brachypelma albiceps. You can also throw the, you know, perpetual bad hair day B. albopilosum in there. Honestly, there's so many to pick from. If I were to go for my top choices, it's tough. I don't know. I mean, B. hammeri is always going to have a soft spot in my heart for that one because that was the first tarantula I ever saw like a live specimen of, and they're like the hobby classic. So I would say hammeri is a beautiful one as far as a showcase spider. Again, once they put on some size, my B. auratum is stunning. He or she, he's looking really gangly. I don't know. Most of my brachys are a little more stout. This one's looking very gangly, so I'm thinking it might be a male. I hope not, because I've had it for years, and I've waited for it to mature, and that would be kind of a bummer, but we'll love them either way. But that's another good species. My B. bamies are just gorgeous. They are a little more skittish, though. Mine will bolt and hide and kick some hairs, but normally they're sitting right out in the open. So again, there's another one where if you really want to get into it, it's just a matter of preference. Go out there, look up pictures. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not familiar with the names, then go up, look up B. hammeri, look up B. bamie, look up B. auratum, look up B. albopilosum. See which one appeals to you, and then start with that. You're going to get a good showcase spider. And I think with the majority of them, I have not had any of them burrow after about 4 inches or so. I know some folks have albopilosums that will continue to burrow a bit, but mine have been right out in the open. So again, what is the definition of a good showcase spider? One that's going to be visible and one that's attractive. And they check off both boxes, the Brachypelma genus does. So I would definitely name any Brachypelma as one of the best showcase spiders. So moving on, another one that you could literally pick any spider from the genus and it makes a great showcase spider. One of my favorites, Formictopus. And for this one, I'm really torn as to what to make my top choice because they're all so darned pretty. I love the basic Formictopus cancerides, the base model. My Formictopus green femurs are just stunning, especially right after a molt. My Formictopus species blue, or whatever the heck that spider is, because nobody's been ever able to confirm it for me. It definitely looks different than everything else I got, but she's gorgeous. My Formictopus Dominican violets would probably take my top spot only because they're gorgeous violet purple spiders. You can't do much better than having a 7-inch big hulking purple spider. And I think a lot of people, when I do videos on those, we get a lot of, you know, comments about how pretty they are. So I would probably go with I would probably go with the Dominican Violet if you can find it. It's one of the most striking, you know, showcase spiders you can possibly have. Mine are very visible, but they are also probably the two most skittish Formictopus I keep. So there's kind of a, you're going to have a spider that's going to be out in the open, but I'm guessing if you give it a hide and you, like right now mine are in Sterilite containers, they are going to be getting like just about everything in my collection, a bigger, you know, larger, more fancy enclosure. So if given more room to hide or whatever, you may see, usually with the skittish ones, they will take the opportunity to hide if they can, but most, it's Formictopus species. They're going to be out in the open. I will say my species green femur, I have one of them in a Jamie's acrylic enclosure, and that one is out all the time without fail, which is great because the thing is stunning. So Formictopus, I'm glad, because if anything I've done, I feel like I've accomplished in this hobby since getting in it, is obviously I have a love for the genus Formictopus, and I've spent years trying to get people to check them out, and I get like emails and comments weekly with people saying, hey, I saw your Formictopus videos, I'm picking one up, or I just picked up Formictopus and I absolutely love it, which is great. So I can't give enough love to these guys. I do think they've been overlooked for years under, mostly Pamphibidius kind of gets all the recognition because they're more expensive, they're big spiders, and they're gorgeous, don't get me wrong, my Pamphos are flipping stunning. But I think they sometimes overshadow Formictopus. So I would definitely put Formictopus in there. And as far as Pamphibidius species, I would say my Antinous is quite, and it's, God knows which, there's a bunch of different versions of Antinous out there right now. So I don't want to leave from Pamphibidius off this list because I know there's a lot of Pampho lovers up there that will quite frankly probably march to my house and burn it to the ground if I don't mention them. And I do think my Pamphibidius Antinous is a great showcase bird. She's got a big enclosure. She does have a hide, which she will use if startled. But more often than not, when I take her enclosure out and do maintenance and feed, she's right out in the open and she's a big, gorgeous, dark beauty. My other Pamphos, I don't have a lot of Pamphos. I have the Pamphibidius Aranha Pollito, which is right now becoming much more visible. She's molted. She's probably pushing about 5.5-6 inches now, and I see her a lot more often. But again, there are a lot of people that suspect that those might just be P. Antinous, so I'm not sure if it's a different species from my big female. I'll have to see what happens when she molts a couple times, maybe compare the molts. I have Pamphibidius species Duran. She's out. She's one of the most skittish spiders I have. And again, I don't know. Other people might have species Duran or similar species and might not see this behavior, but mine's not particularly visible. She will hide. She's still doing not burrowing, but she definitely has a den that she hides in and won't come out very often. And when she does, she's racing all around. I don't know if put in a larger enclosure, and she will be getting a larger enclosure with some room to move and some foliage, she might be more visible. But I would definitely say for folks looking for a big, beautiful spider to showcase, you can't, there's certain species of Pampho that are just going to be great showcase spiders. And it's just a matter of, you know, again, I can only comment on my Antinous being a good one, but talk to other people, find out what they have and what's, you know, always out in the open, and go by that and use that to gauge your purchase if you want to pick one of those up to kind of show off to friends or, you know, just have be a centerpiece of your collection. All right, the next one up is so readily available in the hobby and definitely would be, I'd consider, you know, one of the top five hobby staples right off the bat would be the Lasiodora parahibana, which make fantastic showcase spiders. I have, I believe, four of them now. Once they get over their burrowing stage, always out in the open, always just, one of my females now is pushing probably around 8 inches, big, husky girl, and she's always sitting right out in the open where you can see her. I had people come over the other day, and they went through my tarantula room, and somebody saw her like right off the bat, like, whoa, what is that? And came over to check her out, and I got to do my little spiel and talk about her a little bit. But Lasiodora species, easy to come by, relatively fast growing overall. Most people that pick them up report that they get some pretty decent growth, although I will say mine were not anywhere near as fast in the growing, fast growing as my Formictopus early on, my Pamphibidius, or my Theraphosa. I mean, Theraphosa is almost in a league of its own, but those other, you know, similar species, mine grew much, much more slowly than they did, but still, they put on a lot of size, and they're huge as adults. And again, you'll hear people talk about how they can get to be 11, 12 inches. I think 8, 9 inches for this species is realistic. I'm not going to discount that somebody, I did finally see a molt that somebody showed me of one of theirs that molted, and the molt itself was right around 9.75 inches or so, right around 10 inch mark already. And this was before it molted. So I'm guessing this spider is easily over 10 inches. So I do believe they can get that big, but I don't believe it happens as much as people like to think. People will pick up a sling and go, oh, I'm going to have a 10, 11 inch spider. And not necessarily. And if you do, it's going to take many, many years. But Lasiodora, the whole genus, any Lasiodora species for the most part, is going to be a good showcase spider. I have the Itabune. I have the one that's some type of hybrid. Looks like it's probably an LP and one of the other species of it. It was sold to me as, not the Kluge, Difficilis. It was sold to me as L. Difficilis, but now I'm not sure. I did a video featuring my Lasiodora species, and I was shooting the video of this one. I'm like, this does not look like Difficilis. So I kind of put it out there. People were like, it looks like my LP. It kind of looks like part Kluge. When I looked at the molt didn't look like, when I went to sex the molt, it was a female, but it didn't look like any of the female parts of any of the species. It looked like a combination. So I'm thinking it might be a hybrid, but I don't know. I don't have real hardcore proof of that. I do somewhere have the video of the two comparisons of the molts compared to what they're supposed to look like. And it definitely looked different. But anyway, any of the Lasiodora species, you're going to end up with a big, beefy, grade-eating, very visible spider that's going to be a complement to your collection and something that people are going to be able to see and look at and marvel at when they come over. So that's another one where pretty much take the genus, look up a species, see what, you know, what's available, what you would, you know, you can get, what appeals to you aesthetically, and then pick one up, raise it up to an adult, and you're going to have a spider that's going to be out in the open that you can look at and gaze at and take pictures of every time you go into your tarantula room or check out your tarantulas. And next up, we're going back to the arboreals. This one, I think, is probably one of the most stunning showcase spiders I have, and I've found that mine, once they get to be a certain size, they will do some webbing early on, and they will hide. But once they put on some size, they're generally very visible and you'll see them out all the time. So without further ado, we're talking about the Carabina versicolor. Obviously an arboreal species, a true arboreal species, they'll be arboreal even as slings. And the good thing is the slings are even attractive, although the slings will tend to web themselves up a little cocoon there and try to hide in it and come hunt out of it. But the adults, I have a big female, it's quite old, an older female now, that she is always out in the open. She is skittish. And again, people will often talk about theirs being very laid back, but mine went through a stage where I probably could have handled her. I guess if I stuck my hand out, she probably would have walked on it. It would have been fine. After her last molt, she had a sack of slings. She molted after that. And after that last molt, she's been pretty crazy. So I would not try to handle her. I could picture her jumping, running around. But beautiful spider, always out in the open. One of my ones I just featured in the video is also putting on size. And although she's still hiding in her little cocoon behind her cork bark a little bit, more often than not when I come in there now, she's kind of sitting right out in the open and at the mouth of this, so you can see her. And I'm assuming when she puts on more size, I'll see even more of her. But again, a beautiful species, one that you can really do up nice in a beautiful arboreal setup. Some of those Exotero nanos work really well. The tall ones you can set up because they're a smaller arboreal species, or something a little larger, but just make sure you give them lots of foliage and cover and anchor points to web to, because they will do some webbing. And if you give them a barren enclosure, somebody just sent me an email and they're like, I don't understand why she's all, you know, curled up in a corner. Well, it was basically like some dirt and a stick and this big like 8x8x14 enclosure, whatever. And the poor thing had no cover. You got to give them some cover. You got to give them some stuff to hide behind. But more often than not, they'll build their burrow behind there with some webbing, and they'll come out and they'll stay out in the open. So Carabina versicolor, definitely one of the top. I mean, this is where, when I get to this part in the list, these top two, I think, are some of the best, most gorgeous. Even just by gauging what guests do when I bring these ones out, they're just gorgeous spiders that really get a lot of attention. They're always visible and they are stunning. So you can't really go wrong. So Carabina versicolor would easily be in my top three. Finally, the last one we're going to talk about, I may go back and bounce over to something else because I feel like I left a couple out, but Chromatopelma cyaneopubescens, or cyaneopubescens, whichever way you want to pronounce it, or the green bottle blue, or GBB would probably be, this is a tough one. I mean, there's no way to really nail down a number one, but I will say, as far as tarantulas I keep that are gorgeous, colorful, visible, and the one thing that the GBB has, again, kind of like the aforementioned Harpactera pulchropes, is the webbing. If you set these guys up right, give them anchor points, they are going to web up their entire enclosures, which means you have this tarantula with the orange tones, the metallic greens, the blue legs sitting against a background of pure white, which really makes them pop. And I will tell you, when people come into a tarantula room, if you have one of these guys set up in a nice cage, they're going to immediately gravitate toward it and go, what is this? Because they almost look fake. They're so beautiful. Now, obviously, we talk about this being, you know, a matter of opinion. And I've spoken to people over the years that don't like the looks of them at all. They don't think they're very attractive. They're not turned on by the colors. And so that's completely, this is where the list goes. It's very subjective. I personally think they're stunning. I know that when I have people over my house, that's one of the ones I'm going to break out and show them, because between all the webbing in the background, I mean, I have one of my females in a bioactive enclosure with plants and webbing, lots of copious amounts of webbing. She sits right out in the open. She's a stunner. So I think that the GBB definitely, again, the top, who can really say what the top three are? Fine, of all the species on this list, I think I've obviously given people a lot of stuff to work with. I'm sure there will be people coming on going, wait a minute, you left this one off. And I'm sure by the time I'm done recording this, I'm going to walk away. Billy and I will go for a walk later and I'll be like, oh man, how did I forget this one? So that's one of the things I can't stand about the list. I always forget somebody. But I do think easily a top three for most people would be the GBB, just because of those, you know, the fact that it is, it's available, it's gorgeous. It's going to be right out in the open. They're fun to feed. And the colors are just stunning. One of the few New World species that sport that desirable blue that most keepers want, especially newer keepers. When they find out they're blue tarantulas, they want a blue tarantula. And this is one of the ones they can actually keep. And they're easy to keep. So I would definitely say GBB, you know, we're going to end it on that and say that's my number one pick right now. But that could change. And honestly, any of the species on this list could make really good showcase spiders. And of course, as I'm sitting here right now, all of a sudden I look down at my notebook and realize I forgot one that was going to be on here earlier. So this is, again, how those my lists are very fluid things. They're never set in stone, but should be included on there. Acanthus scuria geniculata, which I believe I left out earlier on. But again, beautiful, big-bodied tarantula that a lot of people keep and that are usually, when they get to adulthood, very visible. Another species you could absolutely look out for, add to your collection, and expect that once it puts on size and becomes an adult, you're going to have something very attractive that's going to be out in the open that you can show off. So again, as you know, not to kind of dodge any, you know, criticisms of this, because I'm sure there's going to be people out there that bring stuff up that I should have put on it, or and I'll probably agree. But this is a tough one to do, obviously, because there's so many species available and so many variations from spider to spider, temperament-wise and just how they act and behavior. Some people will report that they have G-pulcropes, I'm sure, that are still burrowing and they're larger and they don't see. I'm sure people will have the Herpactera pulcropes and they'll say, hey, mine burrows all the time, I don't see it. So it's really tough to do this one only because there can be such a variance between species and specimen to specimen, and that can make it difficult to really pin it down. And so this is my best attempt. I'm pretty pleased with it overall, and I hopefully gave some people a springboard. Perhaps we can revisit it next week. And I think the way to do this one and how I kind of envisioned it is, here's what I'm seeing. Here's the ones that I, in my collection that I've seen that I think would make good showcase spiders, but open up the comment section. We'll do it next week. We'll start off with just going over the comments and we'll see what people say. If there are a bunch of people mention certain species, then we're going to have to add those in the next one to kind of, you know, update it and give an update from the people who are listening, because, all right, this is my list, but I'm one keeper. Let's hear what the rest of you guys are saying. And you guys may have ones on there that it could be something I have and I didn't think of and I forgot about, or mine acts differently. Or what I'm hoping is there's going to be species out there that you guys have kept that I haven't, that you can say, hey, you know what, Tom, these ones actually make really good showcase spiders. And we can kind of add to it and come back to it. I like those. I like that idea, because it's not just my list now, which again is very fluid and will probably change by the time I end up recording this, but also other people kind of adding their input as well. So that'll do it for me as far as the, you know, my list of the what I see as the best showcase spiders in my collection. Next week, we'll see how it goes. I might have something to add to it. Hopefully, you guys will have something to add to it. But hopefully, I give people a nice springboard as far as where to start if they're looking for spiders that are going to be really visible that they can show off. Not that we don't love the fossorials. I love fossorials. But for a lot of folks, if they buy a spider, they want to see a spider, not just stare at dirt all the time. That's completely understandable. And these ones on this list will fit that bill and will give you some nice, beautiful adults that will be out in the open for you to share, you know, you to just enjoy on your own or share with friends. So that should about do it for this one. Again, looking for feedback from people that, You know, what are you keeping? What are you finding is a good showcase spider? Let us know. And feel free to include photos. That would be cool, too, if we actually see the setups with the spiders in them. Again, I'll be turning this into a YouTube video at some point because I do think this would be a good one to have actual pictures of the spider. So I'll be doing a formal script for that. But this is my more laid-back, fun, conversational approach. So this is more how I'd love to do them. They just don't work. Like, if I took this podcast and just added pictures, it just wouldn't work as well as a video. So we'll do it as a video at some point. But let me hear what you guys think, and maybe we'll include some of yours in the actual video when I do it. So it'll be kind of my picks, including some listeners' picks, which are, I think, would be pretty cool. So that'll do it for this time. As always, you can check me out on thomasbigspiders.com, the website. I have, obviously, the YouTube channel, Tom's Big Spiders, and I'll catch you guys all next time.